Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
Good morning. I'm Ewan Kerr, sitting in for Angela Davis. Today we are talking about how the Minnesota theatre scene has survived the pandemic. I got a small hint the other evening when I visited the corner of Frogtown Park here in St. Paul.
Lock the door! Turn the lights off! Stay down!
We gotta get out of here. We can make it at that window and climb down and
no,
break
no,
the car.
No, 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 we won't make it. We can't make it.
Turn the thing, man. Just run.
Where did everyone go?
Well, we're going to run. It's our only way.
Did they hide in the cellar?
That was a rehearsal of part of Hopscotch, which Wanderlust Theatre will present at the Frogtown Park this weekend and at Newell Park next weekend. It's a collection of 10 plays, each 10 minutes or less, each written by local playwrights, responding to the prompt, what would the future look like if we actually applied what we have been learning about ourselves and society? The idea is to have some fun, get people back into the habit of going to see a show, while also producing a little income for the writers and the 17 actors who will perform. This is how one company is coming back from the pandemic, which didn't just lower the curtain on Minnesota theatre, it may well have lowered the boom on some theatre companies. So we wanted to learn more about what's going on. My guests today are directors of three local companies, Lily Tong Crystal from Theatre Moo, Kevin West from the Capri Theatre in North Minneapolis, and Joseph Hodge from the Guthrie Theatre. Welcome, everyone.
Hi.
Hi there. It's always fun. We're doing this remotely, folks, so new skills we're learning today. We've got a lot to get to today, but I wanted to start with a lightning round and ask each of you, if you would, now this is the challenge, in a single sentence, describe Minnesota's theatre scene as it is right now. So let's start with Joe. One sentence.
I'll give it in one word. I think re-emerging.
That's a good one. Okay. Kevin.
The theatre scene is hanging on.
Great. That's good. And Lily, how about you?
I think the theatre scene is reinventing itself and changing and reinventing itself.
Great. Well done. You managed to do it. Thank you very much. We want to hear from the audience, though. Are you a theater goer? Did you enjoy any pandemic offerings from a local theater company over the last few months? Are you planning to go back to the theater if you weren't a theater goer before? What would it take to make you become one? Call us at 651-227-6000, or you can tweet me at Ewan Kerr. That's at EuanKerr. Now, I'd like to ask each of you how quarantine went, but I know that it's a huge question, and I'm not asking you to describe 18 months. So let's maybe do it this way. Let's ask you each about a high point of quarantine. Lily, can we start with you?
Sure. I mean, quarantine was so filled with both positives and negatives. I mean, of course, it was such a time of grief and pain for so many people, and especially for people in the performing arts industry when work really stopped in person. And I think it was a matter of at Theatre Moo of doing what we could during the pandemic to continue to do artistic work, build community around the world, and also employ our artists. And especially during this time when we're, fighting against the rise of anti-Asian violence, because we are an Asian American theater company. And we did a lot of work during the pandemic, readings, like a talk show with Asian American theater artists, and also artistic work. And one of the highlights, I think, was we did a fully produced virtual production. It was kind of like a live movie. It was like a live film theater where we did a fully designed production of Susan Soon, He Stanton's Today Is My Birthday. That's the name of the play. And we had six actors across three different time zones all performing live with, and we had like 9 live cameras going at the same time with a streaming producer in Tennessee who was taking all the cameras live during whichever relevant scene, like one would in an awards show or a live sports broadcast.
Wow.
And that was, you know, we were proud of the work, and also we felt like it broke into some innovative ways of doing theater virtually live, and also as a way for us to employ not only actors, but dramaturgs, designers, stage managers, et cetera. And I think it represents kind of what we were trying to do artistically during the pandemic at a time when there was so much grief in the community about not being able to do artistic work.
Let me quickly turn to Kevin at the Capri Theater, which is you present many different performers there. What was the high point for you during the pandemic?
Opportunity to look at our videos about the new space.
I'm sorry, you seem to be breaking up here. I think I'm going to ask our engineers to see if we can get Rian back with you. Joe, the high points for the Guthrie.
Yeah, it's hard to talk about high points over the last 18 months, but I think, you know, we didn't want to. Last holiday season would have been our 46th annual production of A Christmas Carol, and we didn't want to. We just didn't want to not have some sort of offering for our community, and so we took Dickens adapted his own novella for his own performances, and he put it in 4 staves or chapters, and he did his own reading performance of it, 200 years ago. And we took that script, and with my colleague and friend E.G. Bailey, we co-directed a film of that Christmas Carol. So we shot the actors one at a time. We were in the height of the pandemic, so we were all practically in hazmat suits. And we shot the actors one at a time on the Guthrie stage and put together this version of A Christmas Carol, which was viewed by patrons from all 87 Minnesota counties, all 50 states, including Washington, D.C. and the U.S. Virgin Islands and 15 other countries. So, you know, some 150,000 plus K-12 students were able to view it at no cost. So it felt good to be able to have an offering for our community during this terrible time.
You know, I'm going to get back to Kevin in a moment. We've actually got a call, though, from Heidi in Bloomington, who kind of touches on this. Heidi, good morning. Tell us about your pandemic experience with the theater scene.
Well, I am one that has severe allergies in recent years, but I haven't been able to go to in-live performances for maybe 5 years. And so when the pandemic came along and offered up suddenly some online opportunities, that was really exciting for me because I love theater and I love music. And so I just hope that going forward, whatever they do, they continue to think about that as being part of their offering, because I really missed seeing live theater.
Wonderful. Thank you for calling today. Let's quickly jump back to Kevin, though. Sorry about that, Kevin. What were the high points for you at the Capri?
Well, you know, we just went through a major renovation and expansion. So while we were down, it gave us an opportunity to, you know, we created a video and invited community members in to talk about their visions of the space and how we can include them. You know, it gave us an opportunity to take a fresh look at our programming. And it also has given us an opportunity to learn the new technology that has come along with the new space, because things have changed within the past year and a half that we've been down. So it's been a blessing in the sense that it's given us an opportunity to prepare for reopening, because as you know, and you may not know, we're also a contract alternative high school through Minneapolis. So we are trying to get everything in order to prepare for our students' return.
I think that's one of the great things about the theater scene here in Minnesota, is that most places have several strings to their bow, as it were. I mean, you're functioning in multiple ways and really serving the communities in different ways. So let's just go back to that question that Heidi brought up. I mean, a lot of companies did turn to doing virtual performances. And, you know, frankly, some of them were really good. Some of them weren't so great. Are these going to be just part of the theater scene now? I mean, Lily, I'd be interested in your thoughts on that.
I'm sorry, could you repeat the question? I didn't quite catch it.
So the virtual performances have become, you know, a major part of theater performances over the last few months. Are they here to stay?
I think so. I mean, you know, what it was great to hear that caller's comment, because I think, you know, at Moo, because we try to be as accessible to our communities as possible, and even before the pandemic, we had pay-as-you-are pricing so that anyone could come to any of our shows for as little as $5. And what the pandemic taught us was that through our virtual programming, we could reach people like the caller who could not make it to the theater, people who, like Asian Americans who may not have an Asian American theater in their backyard, in their neighborhood, that they could actually have access to Asian American theater, even though they were in a different market. And our interest is to create theater that's radically accessible. And so we plan to continue doing, you know, virtual programming of some sort. And we also hope to, for instance, live stream or record our in-person productions so that people can see them if they're not there in person. Like they could be broadcast virtually. So we are planning to continue doing some work, you know, virtually, even though we want to get back to the theater in person, you know, just as much as anybody. And we feel like there's a space to do some hybrid models moving forward.
We have a call, Ashlyn in Minneapolis, who I think has a slightly different view. Good morning, Ashlyn. What are your thoughts?
Hi, morning. So I just very much believe, as both a performer and as an audience member, that theater cannot thrive, and it shouldn't thrive in the online format. I think it's in the last few months we've had to support ourselves working in that format. Although I think that intrigue will be found in this art more than before, due to it being something that should be and needs to be live.
Thank you. There is something, you know, to go back to that old adage, the roar of the grease paint and the smell of the crowd. I mean, there is something very special about being in a room with a group of people hearing that reaction. Joe Hodge, you are preparing for a full season. Are you, and you have a lot of, you know, let's be frank, a lot of seats to fill. How confident are you that people are going to be coming back?
Yeah, I don't, you know, confidence, I guess, is beside the point. You know, a couple of months ago, we were hoping for a fall and winter that looks different than I think we're going to be entering. I think we're entering an uncertain fall and winter. So, you know, I don't think it's going to be a light switch. I think it's going to be a path towards filling those large auditoriums, as you have said. But we have a lot of folks who are ready and able to come back, and we are mandating vaccines for audiences. We want them to feel maximally safe in among one another, and we'll have masking requirements as well, or a recent COVID test to allow admittance. I think it's going to be a path. I mean, I think it's going to take folks a while to be comfortable again. And I take the caller's point that, you know, the nature of our art form itself is about gathering as community. And so I think there are a lot of folks who are really, really eager to get back to that. And we'll go into live performances, beginning previews at the end of September. And, you know, we'll see how we do.
We have Thomas on the line from Minneapolis. Thomas, you're a theater lover. Are you ready to go back?
Absolutely. I just have one question, maybe possibly two, about local theater. I love going to Ordway and the Guthrie. Those are my first two choices, just because of the professionalism of the musicians and stuff. But I love community theater. And my question is, I'm walking around like Harriet as I speak, so if I sound out of breath, you know why. I went to see at Southwest High School, the school put on the play Les Mis. And I've seen Les Mis professionally about half a dozen times, to include the West End in London. And I have to say that that play Southwest put on was so good. And knowing that it was students, I cried at the end. I cry at the end of Les Mis at every production. But for teenagers, 15-year-olds, 17-year-olds, to put on something that good, it was amazing. And then the worst part, this is my question. They only put on three shows. Each one was sold out. I was lucky to be allowed to see the standing room, get standing room. And I know it's uncles and aunts and grandparents buying up all the tickets, right? Why are there restrictions for local communities? Can't they let it roll until it's not sold out?
That's a very good question, although I have a feeling it's probably they need the space in those student or those school auditoriums. But thank you. I mean, I must admit it's been my experience that student productions, there are few more passionate than those particular shows. But I wanted to ask all of you. I mean, the Guthrie has got this vaccine mandate now in place. I'm hearing other organizations, artistic organizations, are doing this. Is this just going to become an industry standard, do you think? And Kevin, I'm curious. Are you at the Capri? Are you going to be requiring vaccinations?
Well, the thing about the Capri, we are a rental venue, so we are consulting with experts and our partners on what their COVID policies and procedures are going to be. For instance, we have a relationship with St. Paul Chamber Orchestra. You know, we have a First Thursday Films with the, Minnesota St. Paul International Film Festival. So we're consulting with them right now as we go forward with programming. And we're also having these conversations within our own team within the Capri. So we're not quite open yet. We don't open until October. So we're taking time to really thoroughly think this out and make sure that we're making the right decisions to not only protect ourselves, but to protect our audiences, protect our youth, protect our audience, our artists. So we're still in conversations right now as what we're going to do.
Okay. Lily Tung Crystal, Theater Moo, what are your thoughts on the vaccine?
It does seem like in talking to other theater companies that there is a standard policy that people are putting in place after discussions amongst all the theater leaders. You know, we're an itinerant company, so we don't have our own venue. So we will be, we will be talking to the places where we are doing our pieces and abiding by their policies in terms of COVID safety and policy and vaccinations. Also, we are going in person. Our next season, we just announced our next season, and the first part of the season is still virtual. We're going back in person in January, February. So we also have some time to see how the next few months go and learn from others and follow the policies of the spaces that we're in.
We are talking about the Minnesota Theater today and what's happening to Minnesota theaters because of the pandemic. We'd love to hear from you to be part of this conversation, particularly if you are outside the metro area. What's happening to the theaters in your town? Give us a call, 651-227-6000, or you can tweet me at Ewan Kerr, that is at EuanKerr. Don't blame me. Blame my parents. We'd love to hear from you. We'll be going off to the news in a couple of moments here. But one question I had is about the audiences of the future, because clearly an effort which many theaters are involved in is bringing in youngsters with the idea of get them in young, make them love the theater, and then have them coming back year after year. Has the pandemic had an impact on that? I mean, obviously, Joe Hodge there at the Guthrie, the Christmas Carol has been an entryway for many, many, many people into theater going. You had this film, the Dickens Christmas Spectacular, and which was you gave to schools for free. I mean, how confident were you that will pull people in?
Yeah, our Christmas Carol in any given year at the Guthrie, it's an extraordinary sort of gateway experience into live performance in the theater for many. Some 40% of our audience for Christmas Carol every year, even though it's a tradition and people bring their kids and now their grandkids because it's been on for so many, many, many years, making refreshed productions every 8 or 10 years or so. Some 40% of our audiences in every year are brand new to the Guthrie. It's the first time they've hit our threshold. And we know that some of the barriers to entry for the theater, some of them, of course, have to do with costs. Once you've come to a place before, you know it, and you've had a reasonably good time, you're more likely to be able to come again. So not just for young people, but for grown folks as well. Christmas Carol is a kind of gateway. And one of the things that the field has learned over the years is, if you introduce young people to the theater, it's not that you're going to have them continuously. So what the field has learned is if you expose young people to the theater, what they do is, they get to their 20s, they get out of high school, they go to college, and they go away from us for a time. They're deep in their study, they're deep in their early professional career, they're starting families. Any of us who have kids know, when you have young kids, you don't do anything, you can't do anything. But those people will come back. A lot of those folks come back to us in their 40s and 50s, and then they're theater goers for the rest of their lives. I think the field has reconciled itself that folks go away for a while. There are other things that need to be done. But then they come back and they're with us through end of life, which is extraordinary. What the field also knows is if you don't expose young people to the theater, there are very few 40-year-olds you can come to for the first time who've never been in a theater before and say, come to the theater and we think you'll love it. So the field makes tremendous investment in young folks with the foreknowledge that they're going to go away for a time. But then they do come back. And I think the Twin Cities is such a great example of that. You have one of the best children's theater is in the country in this town. You have young people who are exposed to theater early through many of our arts organizations, and so you have an adult community that visits the some 80 not-for-profit theaters in the Twin Cities. It's an extraordinary theatrical landscape.
We are talking about Minnesota Theater this hour. We have with us today Joseph Hodge, who's the Artistic Director of the Guthrie Theater, Lily Tung-Crystal, the Artistic Director of Theater Moo, and Kevin West, who is the General Manager and Artistic Associate at the Capri Theater. Let's go to another rehearsal.
queen that I was, and a little tiny boy with a hey-ho, the wind and the rain. A foolish thing was but a toy, for the rain it raineth every day.
So the date was February 2020, and the show being rehearsed was no doubt near and dear to Joe Hodges' heart, Shakespeare's Twelfth Night, a Guthrie production, which featured a host of local Minnesota actors. The voices we just heard were Laverne Seifert and Jim Lischeidel. So we have a lot of people on the line, and I wanted to go to Audra in Moorhead, who is calling in about her love and challenges, I suppose, with the theater scene. Good morning, Audra.
I've been raised in the theater. I've been acting in the theater since I was 7 years old, and it's always been an important part of my identity and who I am. And I struggled a little bit, actually, with the comments that were recently made by your guests, because I right now am one of those people that they said, you know, they kind of recognize don't come to the theater for a while. And I think that's hard because it has at times felt like I've been written off. I have young children and I live in outstate Minnesota. And so when I want to come to something like the Guthrie or the Ordway, I don't have the position to be a season ticket holder. And by the time that they're released to the general public, oftentimes the only seats available are weekdays or obstructed view. And if we're going to come to the theater, it's a big investment. So one of the best things that has happened in the pandemic has been the access to virtual theater. I've been able to foster my kids' love of theater through things that are virtual. And I do sometimes worry that we'll continue to be written off as things reopen because we're at this stage in life, even though it is, in fact, really important to us.
Thank you very much, Audra, calling in from Moorhead. Well, that's an interesting question there. I mean, Joe Hodge, she mentioned the Guthrie. I know that there is a big effort at the theater to reach out to people in Audra's position, but clearly she believes there needs to be more.
Yeah, I really appreciate Audra's point, and I really think that, you know, what we have learned in this virtual programming universe that we were all rather forced into over the last 18 months, I don't think it's a replacement for live theater, and I'm certain Audra's not saying that it is, but if you look at that through the lens of access, I think that's the part of this virtual world that is here to stay. You know, there are folks who can't get to us for geographic reasons. There are folks who can't get to us for any number of reasons, can't come to the Guthrie to see a show. And it could be somebody who no longer drives at nighttime as well as anyone else. So I think the idea of maintaining some level of virtual programming as seen through the lens of access, allowing opportunity for those who can't get to us for one reason or another. I think that portion is here to stay. I really do.
Lily, Kevin, do you have any thoughts on the accessibility issue?
Well, yes. Go ahead, Kevin.
Well, I would have to agree. I think it does offer access. It offers access to audiences that can't get there for whatever reason. But it also offers access for artists. You know, I'm also a working actor, and the more notoriety, well, not notoriety, the more exposure you can get as far as working on your crafts gives you more opportunity to work in other places. So I think it's here to stay. I think it's a good thing. But I also understand what the caller is saying, and I do love the smell of the grease paint and the roar of the crowd, as you said, Ewan, and those are the things that we need to continue because that feeds the spirit. And we know when we come together collectively and experience something like a play, we leave better. We leave better, you know, and you can take that whether it's mentally, physically, spiritually, emotionally. We're all touched collectively and we're able to go our separate ways and take that energy with us.
And Lily at the Theater Move?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with Kevin and Joe. You know, we all want to be in person. And like I said before, our interest at Theater Moo is to make theater as radically accessible as possible. And so we're trying, you know, we want the best of both worlds. We're going to go back in in-person theater, and we're wanting to live stream our in-person productions so that people who can't get to the theater, like The Caller, or Asian Americans who don't have, you know, who are farther away from us, who don't have access to Asian American theater, can still come and see the theater virtually. So, you know, that's at MOO, it's one of our priorities to make the work as accessible as possible.
You know, I something caught my eye the other day. The Jungle Theater in Minneapolis just announced its season, but one of the things they also announced is that they are having what they're calling "pay as you are," which is kind of a sliding scale thing for tickets. Now, this has long been a part of Mixed Blood, which has radical hospitality, where basically all seats are free. It's first come, first serve, but you can reserve a seat for in half the theater. So if you really want to go on a particular night, you can buy a ticket. But otherwise, it's people who are at the door just before the beginning of the show. But at the Jungle, they're doing it that they're asking people who can pay $45 for a ticket to pay $45, and then other people help cover the cost of other people who can't afford that much. I mean, it's also well known that the price of tickets rarely actually cover the full cost of a show, and you need other supports. I mean, is the ticketing, are we going to see changes in ticketing like this becoming more common? I mean, Lily, at Theater Moo, is this something that you talk about?
Yes, as I mentioned before, you know, we actually are, you know, part of the Jungle Theater's rollout of the Pay As You Are program is on the show that we're co-producing with them this season called Cambodian Rock Band.
I forgot about that. Thank you for reminding me.
Yeah, and so that Pay As You Are program kind of came up in discussion with us because we've been doing Pay As You Are for years, where it's the same model where you can come for as little as $5. To any, and you don't have to wait in line or anything for a ticket. You just, when the tickets are released, you can get a ticket for $5, as low as $5. And we call it pay as you are so that we ask that if you're used to paying full price for a ticket, like say it's $45 for market value, if you're used to paying that much, then we ask, you know, we welcome that payment for a ticket. But if you can't pay, you know, $45, $35, $25, and you can come for as low as $5. So we've been doing pay as you are for many years already, and we found that we didn't lose income because people who could pay $45 paid $45, and the people who couldn't paid less. And it's a way for us. I mean, we instigated it because, you know, we represent Asian American communities, a large diaspora where theater may not be the norm for people to go see, and there are many immigrant and refugee families in our diaspora who may not have the means to come to the theater, and so we wanted to make theater as accessible as possible. Like I said, we're interested in radical accessibility, so that's why we instigated Pay As You Are, and we're thrilled that we're doing that with our production with the Jungle Cambodian Rock Band.
Of course, Theater Moo did that marvelous restaurant tour a few years ago, where you took a production into Chinese restaurants around the state and got into a whole new audience, I think, from what I understand. Kevin West at the Capri, are you talking about ticket prices?
Well, you know, again, we are a rental venue, but we also present some of our own programming. And for instance, like our relationship with SPCO, you can call in or sign up for tickets, and they're open and free for on a first come, first serve basis. Our first Thursday films, there are ways to get complimentary tickets for that if possible. You know, we have the Capri After School Theater, our Camp Capri Summer Programming, our Capri Glee, Adult Community Choir, all these programs. As Lily said, accessibility is very, very important to us at the Capri or in one part of the city, but we want the entire region to know that the Capri is a destination spot and open and welcoming to all. So accessibility is a word that comes up in our meetings a lot, and we want to make sure that people know that if they contact us, we will make a way for them to come in and witness.
Thank you. We're talking about the state of the Minnesota theater scene post-pandemic. We have a full bank of phones. We also have an answer. Kayla in Alexandria called in. Someone asked about why don't high school shows run longer? Good morning, Kayla.
Good morning. Hi.
Hi. So what's the answer?
So I've been the assistant director for the Alexandria Area High School musicals for the past 9 years, and there's a lot of factors that go into it. One is budget. You have to pay royalties for every performance. So if your school has a small budget, you can only do a certain number of performances. Scheduling, a lot of it has to do with what's available at your performance venue. So a lot of it comes down to money. So if you're complaining about your ticket prices at your high school show, that is covering all of the production costs, but maybe not even all of it. So,
but as I have you on the line, let me ask you another question. You missed a year of performances. I mean, how was that for the students who, all those theater students, those drama students who were desperate to get on stage?
So that's a funny story. I actually stopped directing the year of the pandemic because I had a baby. So
congratulations.
Thank you. I'm sure it was tough for the students. I know a lot of them missed it. There were some smaller productions that happened later on, you know, the year after last year, there were a few smaller productions, but it was very different. And I know a lot of those kids really missed it and missed out on, you know, their senior year musical, which is usually a big deal.
Thank you very much for calling in today. John is on the line from Stillwater. Good morning, John.
Good morning. Yes, I appreciated the comments from Joe and the others about the accessibility angle. And I've worked with people with disabilities getting into theaters for many years. And the issue, making theater a barrier to many people, is typically attitudes. The attitudes that, oh, they don't really need those services. It's the same with COVID. Attitudes of people who haven't been vaccinated, keeping the rest of us away from theater because...
Hello? John, you still there?
Yes.
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
Yes, in the last month, I've been to 4 shows. 3 of them were outdoors, and I was worried at each one because there were so many people, and what kind of a super spreader was that? On Sunday, I went to an indoor show that was spaced, and it was wonderful. And in a couple of weeks, there'll be a state festival in Pipestone, and that will be, people will be spaced around the theater, socially distanced. There'll be audio description for people who are blind. And we're trying to do the COVID protocols that are going around. I don't know if we'll have the one that says you must have vaccination proof, but I would certainly support that. And I really appreciate the theaters that are saying you must be vaccinated if you're going to see our show. Otherwise, you're not safe for the rest of us.
Well, thank you for calling in today, John. We have Vince in St. Paul on the line, too, who I think has a different view on that. Hello, Vince.
Yes, sir. Thank you for taking my call. Yeah, I guess I'm on the flip side of that. For religious purposes, I can't put anything synthetic in my blood. So I take it, I guess I'm... The theater is no longer for me, I take it.
I mean, have you been watching the virtual shows, or?
Well, that's the same thing. To me, that's the same thing as watching television. You don't get to sit down with people around you. You don't get to, it's just the same thing as watching The Late Show or something like that by yourself, and that's not healthy. So I like to be out in the public and watching the talent and smelling the air and the atmosphere of the live play.
Well, thank you. Thank you for calling in today. We have a whole lot of people on the line here, and I'm just wondering, could we, let's see, Karen in Madison is working as, with a small community theater. Tell us about what you've been doing. Oh, we've lost Karen. Okay. Well, we have one question here, which is actually specifically for Joe Hodge, and I think it's a question that many people are wondering about. Michael in Minneapolis, are you still there? You still with us? You've been hanging on for quite a while. Hello, Michael.
Hi.
Okay. Yes, we're still there.
I'm calling about the employees. You know, I know that Guthrie Theater is the leader in town, and a lot of their employees have been asked to reapply for their existing jobs that were laid off before COVID. And some of them are even back returning in an interim role, having to reapply for the jobs they're currently serving in. How does that speak to the accessibility and, you know, as a leader in the city, a way to treat the people that are helping put on these productions?
Joe Hodge, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, you know, when we reduced our staff so substantially, you know, we received a PPP loan, which allowed us to keep everyone on and benefited for some 3 months into the pandemic with the support of that loan. And after that, when it was clear that we weren't going to be back to producing for the foreseeable future, we had to make the terrible decisions to let a lot of folks go. So they're not on layoff. They were released from the organization altogether, which allowed them to file for unemployment insurance, et cetera, during that time. So now, as we're in this huge organizational rebuild, you know, we're also looking at, you know, we were, 3 months to 2.5 months into the pandemic when George Floyd was killed. And that murder, you know, created which happened in our cities, the epicenter of a global protest so significant that they knocked a 100-year pandemic off the headlines. And our theaters have a responsibility to respond to that moment as well. And if the Guthrie returns to full staff and the demography of our organization looks precisely like what it looked like prior to the pandemic, I think that will have been a failure. So we are searching all of our positions, and we're doing that as equitably as possible, ensuring that we have diverse candidates at every step of the hiring process. And, you know, we will be back to full strength at some point. We're all rebuilding. You know, who knows how long it's all going to take for us to be back to that full strength. There are many, many people who worked at the Guthrie formerly who will come back to the Guthrie. Many have moved on to other lines, other work, other theaters, moved out of discipline altogether. And we want to offer a sense of invitation to other folks to be able to apply for these jobs. So that's the decision that the Guthrie has taken.
I want to turn to Hava in St. Paul, and she actually is kind of talking about an issue I was wondering about. I remember speaking to Wendy Knox at Frank Theater a number of years ago, talking about how a lot of theater companies, theater organizations are small enough that they can go, as she put it, dormant during times of crisis. And they are now, but there's also the question of some of them go so dormant they never come back. But Hava, you are with the Victoria Theatre Arts Centre on University in Dale?
That's correct. I'm their communications coordinator. And beyond that, I also do my own self-producing. And I just wanted to add to the conversation that a huge piece of the work we've been doing at the Victoria actually really leads into what Joe is saying, and that is, the pandemic was not just the pandemic. It was also George Floyd's murder. It was a whole lot of different upheaval going on. And part of our mission at the Victoria Theatre Arts Centre is to empower the artists in our community of Frogtown and Rondo. So even though we were not doing theatre productions during this whole time, We helped organize over 60 murals along University Avenue. We created a community trauma response program that we held outdoors to facilitate, you know, gathering and grief. So I just would like to add to the conversation that I think a lot of these smaller mid-level companies, and I mean, from our perspective, certainly, are working to do more community outreach and engagement in that way to build that sense of connection rather than the model of just being in a performance mode. And I think we hope to continue this into the future, that this doesn't just go away, that we are deeply rooted and invested in our communities.
Thank you, Hava. Thank you. I mean, clearly, there is a theatrical ecosystem here in Minnesota, which stretches out across the entire state. And that ecosystem has been deeply affected by what has happened over the last few months. I'm wondering about how much damage, as in permanent damage, each of you think has happened, and how long it's going to take to come back from that. Could we start with you, Kevin West, at the Capri? I mean, what is the damage? Can we come back?
I think resiliency is, we are social.
Ken, we're having a little problem hearing you. We'll come back to you in a moment here. Lily, Theater Moo, what are your thoughts?
I mean, you know, we're really grateful that we weathered the pandemic fairly well because of the support of our community and our funders, our artists, donors, et cetera, our audiences. And so I think Kevin mentioned the word resilience, and I feel like the theater industry is definitely resilient, and it's been challenging. I mean, I think it's both, and it's been challenging, and the theater community in general is resilient. You know, surviving through the pandemic as well as the racial reckoning that's occurring in our industry and across the country. So I think, you know, our survival and continuing to move forward is thanks to, you know, the entire community, like the staff, the board, the audiences, funders, donors, et cetera, like I mentioned. And if that community is strong, then we will continue to do art and create work. And I just wanted to, you know, riff off of or comment on what I heard Kevin say mm-hmm. about resilience, because I think that there has been a lot of pain and theaters probably there may be, you know, theater is a hard industry in general, and at all times I think there are theaters who close, and I'm hoping, and it's hard for me to know now, you know, I don't have a crystal ball, I can't know who will survive and who won't, but I think that with the resilience and support of the community, theater can survive.
I am really sorry. We have run out of time. Thank you to our guests here. We have Lily Tung Crystal from the Theater Moo, Kevin West from the Capri Theater, and Joseph Hodge from the Guthrie Theater. Thank you all, and the best of luck.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, Ewan.
Thanks for having us.
You've been listening to a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. You can hear Mike Mulcahy, Ewan Kerr, Catherine Richard, and other guest hosts during a live call-in show at 9 a.m. weekdays throughout the month of August. Looking for Carrie Miller? She's back talking about books and ideas at 11 a.m. every Friday starting September 10th. Thanks for listening.